well versed in polar exploration, which I confess I am not. And from there we go yet further south, eventually to this rather remote station called Halley Bay.
Mm-hmm.
This is all on the same boat, is it?
All on the same boat, yes. It's a Danish ship called the Kistedam.
Oh, the Kistedam sounds like Towson, what is it?
What's the famous?
Magadan.
And then after it departs, the ice closes in. Is that
sort of thing? Well, there is a certain time each year when the ship can
get through
the pack ice. In fact, it is the most difficult part of the Antarctic to go through. Mm. And in the past, there have been a number of occasions on which ships have got stuck in the pack ice here.
Mm.
And now they are finding that there is one very easy way round. And the first time this was found was when Halley Bay was opened in the IGY. And there were two trips down there then. One to open this base, which was run by the Royal Society, and the other, which was Sir Vivian Fuchs's Shackleton base for the Transantarctic Expedition. Well, the Halley Bay journey was the base stores and the personnel were taken down on a ship called the Theron, it was a Norwegian ship, which barely hung together. It was, in fact, the first ship which they chartered from the Norwegians sank on its way to England. So they had to ask for another one, please. Could they have it soon? So they sent another one, which was apparently in equal state of repair or disrepair. And it kept on going wrong all the way there, and the engines would keep stopping, and the captain would just laugh and have a beer quickly, and talk to the engine room and say, look, you might just stoke up the boilers a bit or something, please, we do want to get there sometime. The climax of this fateful journey was in South Georgia, or in Port Stanley, where they found themselves, there was some slight fog or something, and when they saw their way through it, they were heading directly towards the side of another ship. So the captain brightly put the thing into reverse, which is about the only way of stopping a ship, when the engines again stopped finally and refused to turn at all, and so they had no control over it, and it just drifted into the side of this other ship and bent the bows a bit and rolled on the side of the other ship. And the captain just laughed and said, well, one of those hazards of the game, is it? It's just too bad. And the captain of the other ship thought it was quite a joke as well, because he knew where the ship was going. He thought it was understandable. But in spite of the attitude of this captain, he did listen. On his off days, he listened to the whalers and found that the only way into this part of the Antarctic was to skirt the edge of the pack ice and go east, off course in fact, for many miles, and to go around the whole belt of pack ice, and then you can get in down the summit. And he'd got all this sorted out, and he went that way, and in fact got there without any difficulty at all. Whereas Bunny Fuchs's ship, the Magadan, with all the resources of the Transantarctic Expedition, and with two aircraft on board for flying and observing where the pack ice was, and with a brand new ship, they did contrive to get firmly held in their base. And they didn't in fact get to their base until 6 weeks after the Theron, which was made it quite difficult for the party that were eventually left on the coast. So presumably we shall go down on one of the now well-charted routes.
How far are you away from the pole at that base, roughly, an hour?
Well, it's 800 miles, wherein it's about 3 plus or minus 2, I should think.
Yeah.
What are you? Are you
what's known as being in a general direction, I think.
That's right.
Okay.
If I'm being ignorant, are you in fact on land or on ice?
On ice, which is floating on the sea. Yeah. But it's a very big chunk of ice. It's about 600 feet thick. It's called an ice shelf, and it's very, very solid indeed. Mm. This goes inland for probably 60 miles. And then it joins on with what's normally called land, although in fact you can't tell any difference.
No, quite.
There is rock underneath then. And at the junction between the ice and the land, as it were, there is always a crevassed area because the ice shelf goes up and down with the tide and the land stays firm, so you get a lot of cracks in the ice. And I'm hoping that I shall go on a journey which goes past this area and onto the inland plateau for a little way to a mountainous area, which would be particularly interesting.
Then a normal search will be there, what, the year, roughly? And
be there roughly the year, yes.
And this ship normally does, what, one trip a year, does it?
This ship always does one trip, and it goes down in December, and it comes as soon as it's relieved the base, which takes about a week. It departs and comes back in February, March, oblique stroke April. And so the following year I shall come back on the same ship.
How long does the trip take out then?
Well, I think we get there, well, we do get there sometime in January, I'm not exactly sure when. And we do stay about a week in South Georgia. And in fact, nobody really knows, you know, it's rather disorganised.
I think it would be nice, in a way. I don't know, I'd like to be...
Well, that's about it, of course, that for the odd week or two. I mean, you haven't any trains to miss or anything like that.
You've only got a boat to miss.
Of course, Willie here has still got the idea that we can ring you up sometime when we want to, you know.
Oh.
Well, he's got an idea that we can, you know, just... I expect, or whatever it is, if it's possible, he probably would.
That's right.
No, you can send messages, but, you know, like...
But they're stored and radioed over.
Radioed over in a fairly short time, but in fact you can't, unless... I tell you what I will do for the hell of it. If I get the opportunity, I'll try and phone you up.
Yeah, you try and do that.
Because if we got into radio communication with the American base, I'm sure they could do anything.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be great fun.
Oh, it'd be marvellous.
I think it's unlikely. They did from Greenland, the Americans, of course. The main restriction here is the GPO.
Yeah.
In America, the telephones are all public, privately owned. And they don't put any restriction on what's called phone patching, where if an amateur radio ham gets into contact with somebody elsewhere in the world, and he wants to be put in contact with somebody else in the States.
And then the phone lines will play...
Well, I mean, you can do it technically here. A chap like John Bales or someone.
Yeah.
You just do it.
Yeah.
And people
That's
do
it.
But it is illegal.
That's it. Well, there we go then, won't we?
Does John
Bales... Well, I don't know if John Bales has any broadcasting equipment. You see, we could probably pick up hams. If you know somebody who does amateur radio, if he ever gets in radio contact with the Antarctic, then it's quite possible that you know, you could talk over the link.
Is
yes.
Yeah.
And what
it's
the
Americans
do
use it.
Is they erect a very big aerial, a rhombic aerial, and they broadcast to an amateur in the States. They just try different codes and different frequencies until somebody answers and they say, will you patch me in to such and such telephone number?
Yes, yes.
And he patches them in and he logs up the time and how much it's costing him as an individual.
Yes.
And he then sends a bill in.
Yes.
You know, they say, well, send the bill in to such and such.
Yes.
You know, that's going to cost you $4 or something.
Yes.
And they just send it when they get back.
Yes.
And this works tremendously well. And when we were right out on the ice cap on this long journey, we got in radio communication with the base, and they then rebroadcast that on another frequency to a ham in the States who patched them into home, and they could almost guarantee to get anyone a telephone conversation with home.
Amazing, isn't it?
Just for the price of a telephone call
in
the States.
Yeah.
And of course, I could have got in contact with home, but the GPO would have been involved.
Yeah.
And would have charged an exorbitant
fee. Yes, yes, hi.
But Jack Pennell, I should have thought, was a better getting.
It wasn't. I was really thinking that it might be of interest to somebody too. Had a call to make.
Well, I was going to say, Jack Pennell, if we saw we know a bloke who's sitting at the moment on a sledge in Team Husky Dogs, that's it, where's the radio set?
It's just pure interest.
Yeah, Jack, I'm sure, would call some interest.
Well, if you do know anybody who's interested in amateur radios, the thing to do is to write to the British Antarctic Survey in London and ask what frequencies they use for communication with the outside world.
Mm.
And there's no law preventing anybody listening in.
No.
I don't know what frequencies they do use.
No.
That would be the thing to do, right now, so then. Of course, they may not say.
What's the time difference?
Well, it isn't very much, because it's not too far off the Greenwich Meridian.
No,
no.
So you're going to a nice lot of warm weather on the way down, aren't you?
Oh, yes, tremendous.
Yeah?
Yeah, make the most of it, it'll be all last some time.
How many people are there at this place you're going to?
Well, I think it's about 30, but I'm not at all sure.
And what sort of age is it from to?
That I haven't the faintest idea. I just don't know. I don't know anything about any of the people. I've only met one of them.
Are you going out the sort of replacement crew way or something?
Well, most people go down there for 2 years, but I opted for one. And so, I suppose half the base is still staying on for the second year, the other half are going down at the start of their 2 years, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd probably take about 15 people down. I'm only guessing, I don't really know. I'm prepared to wait and find out.
What about clothing? You had to sort of...
Well, we get kitted out in South Georgia. That's all we're going to do.
Mm.
Oh, it's a good financial bet. That's the other interesting point. Of course, they pay you your full salary while you're down there. You don't have to spend it.
You can't.
Well, on small items, and when you dock, you can spend money if you're foolish. Oh, and when you're on the base, you live on credit, if you want beer or something.
Oh, do you?
You don't use money. Well, they do give, they make an allowance, actually. They give you a certain quantity of beer and cigarettes if you want them.
Mm.
But it's not very much.
No.
It's about a pint of beer a week or something like this. I don't know.
Well, of course, all that's got to go down on the same little ship.
Yes, everything goes down.
And under whose auspices is this?
This is run by the British Antarctic Survey, the director of which is Sir Vivian Fuchs. And they have an office in... They're a government department, which puts a completely different tone on the whole thing.
Yeah.
There's no way you can get a plane down or anything, is there?
Well,
what happens in the case of emergency, illness or anything like that?
I don't know.
Well, I can't see that there would be any down there.
No.
You're so isolated, I shouldn't think there's any infection.
On my particular base, there is no aircraft support. There is aircraft support for some of the bases, and looking to the future, by about next year, they are hoping to have planes there which can fly for much longer distances.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you get planes that can fly for long distances, they have to carry more fuel, and the whole logistic programme grows rather as the square or the cube or something like this, you see. Because this is the trouble with the Americans, you see, they use enormous planes. They can take anything they want down in a plane, but the organisation involved to enable these planes to fly in and out is so enormous that it just doesn't bear thinking about. I mean, they fly planes to the South Pole. They have to take all the fuel out to the South Pole first to enable the planes to fly back again.
That's right.
And they just have continuous trains of vehicles going out there to refuel these planes. The whole organisation becomes rather unwieldy. It's much better. The British try and keep things small and simple, and I think there's some virtue in this. But they want to try and strike a happy medium. For some of their bases, they do have light aircraft, and they carry all the fuel down once a year. But they are investigating using some slightly bigger planes now.
What's the living accommodation like?
I don't know very much about it, but I know that it's fairly good. I mean,
you've got your own room? Or
you have your own hut, probably, to yourself. I mean, in the course of time, you tend to build rather a lot of huts. Mm. You have some space of your own, both for your living accommodation and some other place for your scientific work that is your own. There are good workshops, and there are good laboratories for any kind of scientific work. It's a very well equipped place.
Mm. They've presumably got plenty of recreational facilities as well.
Well, they have good libraries, and they have a cinema with about 50 films that are new films each year. And they're usually films that have been on circuit in English cinemas in the previous year. I'm rather hoping they'll have Tom Jones there, which I've seen once. And that's the kind of thing, they take down all the best films. I don't know whether there's a piano, but they do have pianos on some of the bases.
No, they get those.
Do you take a guitar or anything? Well,
I'll probably take one or two things if I think about it. I haven't really thought about when to take it.
It's had a long time, hasn't it? A year.
Oh, Jeremy was saying he's been so involved in getting his equipment underway that, you know, I mean, one also knows, if he gets down there and he's left one dry battery at him, it rather butters the issue.
Oh, yes, it does. Well, the interesting thing is that my supervisor was one of the first people who went to Halley Bay. He was there when they opened up the base.
Mm.
And the organisation was just a little bit chaotic, but he looked on it with an atmosphere of humour. And in fact, they lived rather comfortably, and the only major thing that went wrong was the mains transformer for the radio transmitter burned out, and they didn't have a spare. And there was a radio operator who only knew how to operate radios, didn't have any rules inside at all.
Man.
So the only other chap was this fellow who I know, who knew a lot about radio and what was inside radios without having a clue about how to use them.
So. Yeah.
So faced with this problem, I mean, they have to communicate with the outside world, and if you don't have a spare mains transformers, you are in a pretty sorry state. So he just took it to bits, and he threw away the burnt bits of coil, and he tied all the rest of the wire together, and he rewound it. And I said, but surely the wire wasn't the same length. He said, well, we weren't in a position to worry about that. And it happened to work.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing. But if you plan properly, you don't have that. I mean, I've had to think very hard about spare parts. For oscilloscopes, for example, I wrote to the firm and asked for a spare mains transformer, and they immediately wrote back and said, we have never, ever had one of these break in any of our oscilloscopes, so please tell me exactly why you want it.
Mm.
And if it is faulty, we'll gladly give you a free spare.
Yes, quite. That's the wrong approach, of course.
So I phoned him up, and it was much better to tell him on the phone than got hold of the chap, and said, look, chap, I know one of these has never busted, but in my position, if one does busts, it is about the only component in the whole thing which I couldn't replace.
Yeah.
And if it broke, the rest of the engine would be sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
If that thing broke, for some reason, never mind why, there's nothing else that I could use to replace it.
No, no.
And so he said, yes, but then he made a list of other things that he said you could almost say the same of.
Mm.
So I said, well, if you know so much more about it, why don't you compile a list of things I ought to take?
Yeah.
Which he undertook to do, and in fact he did.
Mm.
And the first thing on the list was a mains transformer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How long has this place been in existence?
Since about 1957.
Oh, yes. Some time.
Well, it'll certainly be a fascinating experience, won't it? I There are all sorts of people who've been to the south of France 17 times, but there aren't many people who've been down there even once.
Sure. Presume we can get out and sort of...
Not in a hurry.
Gallop over the ice floes or something, a bit of exercise. It must be terribly cramped.
Oh, yes. Distance. Yes, you've got miles and miles of flat, pure land or rather ice.
Why don't you just go...
Gallop over if you want to.
What life is done? You couldn't go sort of shooting polar bears or banging off...
No, there aren't polar bears in the Antarctic. There are penguins and seals. People do shoot seals and... People do shoot penguins as well. Apparently a penguin is a really difficult thing to kill because it has adapted itself to live in a very cold climate. And although its brain is in its head, its brain doesn't have the usual functions of a brain. It doesn't control movements of the body and general manipulation of its
oh, is that so?
Its process. It's sort of... dexterity and so on is controlled by some other organ in the body. And so even when you've killed it, the thing still looks to be alive. And it's rather difficult to define when the penguin is really dead.
No.
And
dumb penguin.
Perhaps that's what's the matter with our employees, come
to think. I think that is the answer.
Well, then you've got central heating at the studio.
Anyway.
So there we are.
Well, I'm collecting orders for penguin's eggs.
I want a penguin.
You want a penguin? Yeah. Dead or alive?
Alive.
Oh, but the poor thing will be unhappy.
Well, they live in the zoo.
They live in the fridge, can they?
The one with the gin.
It could live on the edge of our fish pond with our fishes.
With your what? Glub, glub, glub.
Yes.
Well, I think it really is about time that I was thinking of going.
I hope we haven't kept you too long.
Minus 7 minutes to get home. It's difficult even for me.
Yeah. All right, and we'll be seeing you in about a year or a little more.
A little more, yes.
Yeah.